Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us today. You know, when I think about the city and how it's changed over my lifetime, there are lots and lots of things that come to mind. But one of the biggest changes, of course, is to downtown Detroit. When I was a kid in the 1970s and 80s, downtown was the center of commercial and retail activity in the city. It was always crowded day and night. Then, of course, it emptied out as people left the city, as businesses closed up and went away. It was in the 90s and later that people really started to talk about ways we could reshape downtown Detroit, reattract people and businesses and entertainment. And over the last few decades, of course, we really have done a lot of that. Downtown is full of things that we never really had, and full again of things that we used to have here in the city of Detroit. But all of that comes at a cost. One of the things that we've been really awful about, frankly, here in Detroit, is the idea of chasing development with big subsidies. The idea that it's not worth a developer's time or money to build something in Detroit, and so we have to make it worth it to them by subsidizing their projects with taxpayer money. Sometimes that's taxpayer money from people here in the city of Detroit. Sometimes it's from the entire state of Michigan. The other thing, the other cost that attends all of this development downtown is the competition for attention and investment here in the city. Think of all the neighborhoods and how much they could benefit from that kind of investment, from developers building things, rehabbing, attracting new business and activity. We go back and forth about this all the time, whether it's worth all the investment downtown to Detroiters who live far-flung from downtown, who maybe never even indulge in the things that are available for people in downtown Detroit. And we have this argument each time a big development comes up. The latest is a new project led by the Illich family's Olympia Development and Stephen Ross's related companies. It plans to build 4 residential buildings, 4 commercial offices, 2 hotels, on-site parking, and public space enhancements around the District Detroit, which is the neighborhood that was created around Little Caesars Arena when it was constructed. The project is estimated to cost $1.5 billion and be completed by 2028. And as with almost all big projects in downtown Detroit, there's a massive subsidy on the table for this project. $800 million has been proposed in various tax credits. The question is whether all this will even happen. What kinds of things will be prioritized along the way, and what kind of benefits will Detroiters, especially those who have been in the city the longest, realize from this kind of development? It's a debate that's going on right now in many quarters, but especially in some meetings that have been convened in the neighborhood around Little Caesars Arena to talk about this project, how it should unfold, and why. Later in the hour, we're going to talk a little about the severe job shortages that have hit Wayne County with Ray Basham, a county official for a really long time. But right now, we want to stick right here in Detroit and talk about this new development project with Malachi Barrett. He is a reporter who covers the city of Detroit for Bridge Detroit, and he's been writing a lot about this new plan for the District Detroit. Malachi, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and a note on transparency. I should mention that I'm the founder and executive advisor for Bridge Detroit, so Malachi and I work together as well. So let's start here. Tell us about this District Detroit plan, where it comes from, and I guess where we are in the process. This is something that started about a decade ago.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in one sense, as I'm sure a lot of our listeners can recall, we've kind of been through this before. District Detroit was actually the same term used by the Illich's Olympia development to describe a pretty similar vision of a mix of residential, retail, and commercial development that would spring up in the area around Little Caesars Arena, kind of the northern edge of downtown, you know, just south of the highway crossing there. This is District Detroit 2.0, as you could, I guess you could call it. The main difference is now we've got Stephen Ross's related companies from New York as a partner in the project. And this time, you know, there's going to be some hotels attached to it. Largely, though, it is, again, another kind of residential and office space mixed use proposal. There's going to be some retail space for people. Parks amenities are now included in this as well, some kind of public space enhancements. But this is largely all going to take place west of Woodward, again, kind of on the northern edge of downtown. You imagine kind of the area, you know, west of Comerica Park, kind of south of Little Caesars Arena.
And talk about what we've seen so far in the District of Detroit. So I remember when all of this was proposed and the debates about how much would be done and on what timeline. We got an arena. That was the first step. We've seen some other things. But talk about whether all of the things that we were talking about have even yet come to be in District Detroit 1.0.
Yeah, I mean, all that really came out of the you know, first vision 10 years ago was LCA. There was no residential housing that was built. A lot of the sites that were proposed for these places have kind of continued to remain as empty surface lots, parking lots, where people now park to go to some of these games downtown. So there's essentially been, you know, nothing really has happened aside from the arena being built over the last decade or so. And, you know, I think this is kind of where some of the key, you know, community tension comes from, some of the kind of skepticism about another plan that sounds, you know, interesting and potentially, you know, containing a lot of positive benefit. But when you kind of look at the track record, you know, of these developers, that's where some of the skepticism starts to come in. And they've got a pretty aggressive construction timeline. They'd like to get all of this done over the next 5 years. If all of the approvals are done and, you know, the incentives are improved, they could potentially start construction later this summer. And then you'll see kind of a piecemealing of these projects getting sprung up over the next 5 years or so, which, again, I think is ambitious. You know, particularly when we're talking about the scale of this investment, it's mm-hmm. a $1.5 billion project. Each of these individual buildings, you know, are tens to several million dollars or more in investment. So, you know, in a city where sometimes we wonder about contractor capacity, you know, the ability, especially of local Detroiters to take advantage of these construction jobs, which is going to be a pretty big sticking point with these projects. You know, I think there's a lot of community questions about, you know, is this realistic? Are we going to get kind of the football yanked out from under us again, you know, to use a Charlie Brown reference there? So, yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now. I mean, we're in the conceptual phase. We've seen a lot of renderings. There's been a transformational brownfield plan that happened this week where we've gotten a little bit more of a sense of the financial impact of this, you know, the number of jobs that are expected to be created, mm-hmm. The number of residential units, what some of the costs of that will be. But, you know, it all hinges on whether this actually moves forward on schedule.
So I want to talk about the advisory council, the Neighborhood Advisory Council that's been formed to talk about this project and how it will both affect and hopefully benefit the neighborhood around LCA and where this will be built. What are some of the things that people have talked about at these council meetings? What are some of the things that are being proposed, and what are some of the concerns they have?
Yeah, so I think this is really the most interesting aspect of the whole process. In 2016, Detroit passed a pretty unique law for its time that allows residents to negotiate with developers for community benefits in exchange for these taxpayer subsidies. So it was a grassroots-led effort. There were two competing proposals. Ultimately, the city voted for a version of the proposal that was a little bit more watered down from what I think some of the kind of early adopters would have wanted. But in essence, it is aimed at giving the public more of an opportunity to participate in the development process. If we're going to be giving away taxpayer dollars that, you know, could be used for city services or libraries or schools, in exchange to make the financing easier for these projects, what do residents get out of that, you know, aside from just kind of a boost to the tax base and property values and that kind of thing? So the community benefits ordinance is really this, should be a pretty powerful tool. It allows a neighborhood advisory council made up of residents within a defined impact area, around these large development projects. And I should also state that this is only triggered when a development is worth $75 million. Mm-hmm. Or more in investment. So it's really like the largest scale projects, which was kind of, a point of contention at the time. Some folks would have liked to see this trigger for less expensive developments because those still obviously have a big impact. But this neighborhood council gets to sit down with developers over, weekly meetings that have been going on since December and will conclude toward the end of February if we get on schedule here. And they hammer out a deal. They negotiate an agreement that basically sets commitments on behalf of developers to go a little bit further in creating public good. Does that mean maybe they commit to, parks enhancements? Does it mean they commit to creating workforce opportunity programs to train up Detroit's workforce? Does it mean that there's scholarship opportunities for high school kids in the area to get, connected with this? Does it mean there's commitments to have, a certain amount of the retail space set aside for longtime Detroiters or black Detroiters mm-hmm. specifically mm-hmm. to take advantage of that? These are all things that are, hypothetically on the table. So we're in the middle of this process right now. There have been, I think, four or five CBO meetings held at CAFSEC High. And, we're right in the middle of it. So far, there's not an agreement that's been formalized. Members of the council have kind of talked about, do we set a price tag of the investment? Do we ask for, a certain dollar amount? Tentatively, they decided that $50 million is kind of what they would like to see. Although, interestingly enough, we heard in the subsequent meeting that would represent the largest investment on behalf of the developer through this community benefits process by quite a wide margin. The average developer investment is closer to around $2 million. So what I'm kind of paying attention to is, who benefits from this, who wins and loses mm-hmm. when government subsidizes economic development. What's kind of lost when people are offered a chance to influence that process, but they find out that maybe the process isn't as perfect as they would have liked? Some of these questions and contradictions have really kind of driven Detroit's interest in the CBO process and the community itself, who have come out to these meetings in, quite a large number, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to continue talking with Malachi Barrett of Bridge Detroit about the proposal to expand Bridge District Detroit near Little Caesars Arena in downtown Detroit. We're going to start to hear from you, our listeners, as well. Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. Let us know what you think of the idea of expanding the District Detroit. Well, let us know what you think about the idea of the subsidies that we are asked over and over again to provide for development like this. Give us a sense of whether you think this helps the city overall, or does it just help downtown and developers? You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. We'll work you into the conversation. We'll start with Mike in Chesterfield and Frank in Livonia when we get back. Stay where you are. We'll be back with more Detroit Today in a minute. Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you decided to join us. We're talking right now with Malachi Barrett. He's a reporter for Bridge Detroit, who covers the city of Detroit. He has been covering the new District Detroit development, the proposed new District Detroit development around Little Caesars Arena. It would expand that project quite a bit with a number of things that sound, at least, pretty exciting. New residences, new commercial spaces, hotels, all kinds of things. It's a $1.5 billion proposed project, but like most big downtown developments here in Detroit, it is asking for a substantial public subsidy as well. We're talking about the negotiations to maybe get this project signed, sealed, and delivered. And also about the implications, the broader implications, not only of those tax subsidies, but also the continued focus on downtown, while there are other places in the city that often quite desperately cry out for investment and attention. We want to hear from you in the conversation as well. 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Before we get to our listeners, Malachi, I do want to talk about the subsidies that are on the table here. As I said, $800 million. That is a huge number. I mean, I'm somebody who has been following public and municipal finance for quite some time. The sheer size of that number is surprising, but also its relationship to the overall cost. $800 million of a $1.5 billion project. Essentially, what developers are saying is they need taxpayers, and this is a state of Michigan taxpayers. That's where those credits would come from. But they need us to pay half or more than half of the entire project, which is not something I think we're used to seeing. Give us a sense of the debate over these tax credits and what developers say, why developers say they need them at this juncture in Detroit's history.
Yeah, so I think you highlighted kind of the unique nature of just the amount of money that they're seeking. Most of that subsidy would come from what's called a transformational brownfield plan, which is was created by the state of Michigan in 2017. It needs approval from the state and the city, and this allows developers to bundle together a collection of different projects and essentially argue that these should all kind of be treated as one mega development because of the impact that it would have on a particular area. What's interesting to note is that only two projects have received this funding since the program started in 2017. One of them was Dan Gilbert's Hudson Site project, which last summer received some tax abatements from the city that ultimately proved to be really controversial. And so I think we're going to see a similar conversation around this, and I'm excited to see how that shakes out at City Hall. But just to throw some more numbers on the pile here, so of the $1.5 billion project, developers are intended to contribute around $655 million in equity. Mm-hmm. The rest of that money, they are hoping to get reimbursed over the lifetime of the abatement deals, which, just to simplify things, are around 35 years. So essentially what they're going to do is put some of the money up front and then get reimbursed for a larger part of the cost by having the increases in the property value collected and given back to them. And so the main kind of argument here is that if this development didn't happen, the city wouldn't be collecting very much tax revenue from sites that are, either vacant, vacant lots right now or buildings that need to be redeveloped, older buildings that aren't really usable right now. And so the idea is by subsidizing these projects, you create value that wouldn't be there, and the city will ultimately benefit over the long term. Developers anticipate around $751 million in new net revenue mm-hmm. for the city over mm-hmm. this 35-year plan. I think it's important to put that in context, though. They're requesting, you know, $800 million in public funding, and they anticipate that the net revenue for the city will be $751 million. So, you know, that's about a $50 million difference. They're asking for more than what the value will be created there. But ultimately, that's kind of the argument that by supporting this, you get a lot of things that just wouldn't be financially possible. Developers have talked to me, you know, pushing back on some of the headlines that they'd like half of the funding basically subsidized by taxpayers, by saying that, look, I mean, they're not going to make a large return on their investment. Investing in Detroit is still seen as tricky. It's still not seen as a sure thing. And so to get investors on board to do these projects, you know, there needs to be some public support attached to it. They talk a lot about the risk involved in creating new office space and residential units, especially when there's a commitment to have 20% of those be, you know, quote unquote, affordable housing. To the developer's credit, they've committed to lowering the rates for rents below what you normally see for affordable housing. So hopefully that will be actually more affordable for folks. Mm-hmm. But when they do that, they lose out on a lot of money. And so that's kind of the surface level justification for these yeah. kinds of deals.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting to me about that is, again, the timing. It's 2023. We have been at this for some time in Detroit, this downtown redevelopment effort, and things are going, you know, really well with that, right? I mean, there are lots of things that have happened and lots of things that have been developed. I would think that at this point it would be less risky and that the chance of return for developers would be higher than it was, say, 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. And yet the subsidy that's being asked for here is higher both in number and percentage of the project than other developments, including Dan Gilbert's project just down the street from this. He asked for nowhere near this size of a subsidy. And so, you know, the question is twofold. One, when do we get to a point when we don't need to be making these subsidies the way some, you know, people would rather that we not at all? But also, are we moving in the right, you know, direction? Are we again chasing development with these subsidies in a never-ending cycle? And I should note that we have reached out to both the Illich organization and to Stephen Ross's related companies to get them to join the conversation. They are planning to call in. Someone is going to call in and help us understand that, I think. But we are still waiting for that to happen. But Malachi, this idea that you'd ask for this much at this point really, I think, raises important questions about the kinds of development that we're doing and whether it's having the effect that we want.
Yeah, I think that's a really key question. I mean, 10 years ago when District Detroit 1.0, let's call it, was being announced, you know, Detroit was struggling with its bankruptcy and things were not looking great for the long-term, you know, prospect of big investment coming to the downtown. Mm-hmm. A decade later, you know, I think we're in a much better financial situation. I think that's why, in part, and maybe the developers can help us understand this, that we're seeing this happening now. Maybe that's kind of the big thing that's changed. But, you know, Detroit remains really desperate, I think, to shore up its tax base, to create jobs through these kinds of transformational investments. And I think, in large part, it's become kind of standard practice in the development world to expect that this kind of money will be coming, because the way it's talked about in public meetings is just that, you know, these kinds of developments just would not be possible without taxpayers chipping in a little bit, and even more so for affordable housing. A member of the mayor's team at a recent community benefits meeting said that you know, affordable housing just doesn't make financial sense to develop. The return on your investment is not there. And, you know, when you're offering units at several hundred dollars below the market rate, and, you know, the market rate in Detroit, it's tough to find apartments that are, you know, under $1,400. You know, I can't afford to live there. I think a lot of longtime Detroiters, just kind of working folks, struggle to take advantage of those housing opportunities. You know, that's a lot of money that developers are missing out on again. And so I think that's kind of a key part of it. But I think when we come to the decision makers, you know, deciding whether it's worth giving up this money, we're going to see the conversation really hinge on the job creation. Mm-hmm. Development is supposed to create just under 6,000 permanent jobs, with incomes averaging around $95,000 a year. And in some of the new brownfield plan materials that they presented, you know, for the kinds of office jobs that they're creating, these are going to be a lot of kind of technical computer-based skills. You know, that's great. But again, it raises the question of, can Detroiters take advantage of those jobs? Are those going to be jobs offered to people who, you know, are newcomers to the city, moving from the outside? Detroiters should be able to take more advantage of the construction jobs. At least that's the way it's kind of talked about. Construction would create around 1,200 temporary jobs. And that alone could be a big reason the city council supports these tax abatements. We saw a pretty similar argument mm-hmm. with the Hudson Site project last summer where, you know, ultimately the promised jobs we're seeing is too important to not improve the tax incentives. But again, and you know, all this stuff has a but and another side to it. The Illiches have not had a great track record when it comes to hiring Detroiters for their projects. For the LCA project, they didn't meet a 51% locally hired target that the city has set. And so, you know, as part of this too, you know, I've heard a feeling from residents that developers are just kind of willing to eat whatever fines come their way from not meeting that 51% standard. So, you know, it's all just what gets promised, what gets delivered. And, you know, Detroiters tell me every day that they feel like there's no accountability for broken promises in the city.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work into the conversation. Let's start on Twitter. Michael says, I've lived in the district of Detroit for over 10 years. My landlord has literally doubled rent in the past 4 years. The reason, supposedly, is that the district is going to be an amazing place to live at some point in the future. Jeff on Twitter says, I think the people of Detroit deserve an explanation right from the Illiches about what they originally promised and what has happened to progress on those promises. No more money until there is an explanation and legal agreement to complete the plan. I want to go to the phones, and I want to start with Andrew Cantor, who is part of Related Michigan, part of the group that is proposing this development in the District Detroit. Andrew, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks so much for having me. And hi, Malachi. Nice to be speaking with you as well.
Yeah. Andrew.
So, Andrew, we were just talking about the tax credits that are on the table for this project, and I sort of threw out there this idea that this is a larger ask than what we've had for previous development projects, and I just am wondering why would it be bigger at this point in Detroit's history, given that the idea behind previous development projects was to make the environment healthier to invest in, to make the environment better for developers. This suggests that's not happening, at least to me. But I'd love to hear your take on that.
Sure. So I think, for one, I think it really reflects the size of the private investment that's being made here. We are, along with our partners at Olympia Development, you know, proposing a $1.5 billion investment across 10 buildings, which has the ability to really be transformational for downtown. But in order to make those projects feasible, we do need support. And I think, though, there are a couple of, you know, things that have been discussed that are worth, you know, highlighting just for the listeners. One, you know, the The $800 million that is being talked about is a support from city and state revenues. And so when Malachi, I think you talked a little bit about the $750 million of net benefit for the city as compared to an $800 million number. When you take city and state benefit, it's actually $2.2 billion that's comparable to the $800 million that's been forecast to be received in project support. And so on the city level, you know, it's actually a number that's, you know, that's closer to $200 million in return for the $700 million of benefits that are forecast. So that's one thing that I think just sort of to make sure that we're comparing apples to apples is really important. These are complicated, you know, very complicated projects and complicated plans. And Malachi, you've done an amazing job, I think, of digging into what is 800 plus pages of information. But it's also taken, you know, a huge amount of time to just put this together. And there's a lot of complexity there. So I want to make sure that listeners continue to have the facts there. I would also say that none of those receipts that we're talking about, none of that project support at the city or state level is available until we complete the projects, until we've invested the $1.5 billion. And then on the back end, there's risk associated with that because if the tax receipts aren't there, then the source is not there for the public support.
So right. You don't get the credits unless you do the work.
You don't get credit if you don't have these buildings leased.
Right. So Andrew, I want to ask, I guess, a pretty simple question about this. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have that subsidy or a subsidy of that size, would the developers here realize a return, or is this a question of how big the return is? In other words, would you lose money on a project like this if the public weren't willing to subsidize it, or is this about maximizing profit?
It's actually about a binary decision about whether the project happens or not, Stephen, because we're not building on our own account. We build these projects with third-party investors who are seeking returns, mm-hmm. and we can't attract those investors if the returns without the subsidy are projected to be 2.2% when a savings account is garnering something more than that today, right? Nobody is interested, I don't think, in making investments that are risky mm-hmm. in this day and age when you could do better just putting the money in the bank. And so in order to actually make sure that the returns are support construction and support investment, we need this support. It really is a true kind of but for this support, the projects wouldn't go forward. Not anything else beyond that.
So at what point, Andrew, do you feel, given the things that are happening in Detroit and have been happening in Detroit, at what point do we get to the space where we don't need that kind of support to convince investors to develop here in Detroit? I mean, that, you know, the idea that this happens over and over and over again, I think it's one of the things that frustrates Detroiters. It never seems to have an end.
I think that, you know, the conditions that investors will look for and when we'll know that we're in that position will in part be when the city's growing significantly, when young people are choosing to stay in Detroit or move to Detroit, and when there are enough job opportunities for those within the city to continue to improve their lives. And so I think that, you know, there's been incredible work that's obviously been done, but there's an opportunity here to do something transformational, to take parking lots, surface parking lots, and buildings that are not in service, improve them, and build the kind of mixed-use development mm-hmm. that the companies that we talk to nationally as well as locally are looking to be part of, the kind of environments that young people who have, you know, maybe graduating from Wayne State, University of Michigan State, or for that matter, you know, schools across the country are looking for as well.
Yeah.
And
Andrew,
the alternative, the number of people that we talk to, young people who grew up in Detroit and did well, studied hard, and then have chosen to live elsewhere because they didn't see that opportunity within Detroit, is a huge missed opportunity from our perspective for where this city should be.
I mean, it sounds like we've got a ways to go before we get to that point. Andrew, I really appreciate you calling and clarifying those issues for us. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
I appreciate the time, and thank you very much. Have a good one.
I want to go back to the phones here, get some listeners involved in the conversation. Mike in Chesterfield, you're up first. Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey there, Stephen. Long time no see.
Yes.
So recently I started working for the city, and actually I've been dealing a lot with our maps and records for everything. And one of the things I've been noticing a lot is that the past 25 years have been the most transformative for downtown and the surrounding downtown areas. And I like to put the marker on there as the destruction of the Hudson Building. And ever since then, downtown's seen this, not to sound cliche, but the true kind of renaissance, essentially. You know, we've had the implementation of the Riverwalk. We've had the De Quinder Cut, the Q Line, Campus Martius, the renovations at both the Rensen and Cobo. We've had a lot of new construction, and all of this kind of feeds into each other. So I cannot say whether or not District Detroit will pay off in the long term in that sense, but what it does seem like it does, if it were fully implemented, it would kind of essentially fit in with all the other puzzle pieces that have been slowly but surely been set up. So once let's just give an imagination of Detroit at the end of the decade in 2029, 2030 sort of time frame. If this complex of buildings is set up, then it is with our relatively new stadium district.
Yeah.
It
completes a piece
Woodward.
Of the pie. Mike, I don't want to cut you off, but I want to get to a couple other listeners. You're not wrong. If you look at downtown and where we need to kind of push development, this is certainly in that space. It doesn't mean there aren't other questions, but I think that's an important point. Richard in Detroit, you're up next. Richard, what's on your mind?
Yes, thanks, Stephen. Great show. As a Detroiter, I'm a fat no. I think one of the things we need to look at when giving this money away is what is the track record of the developer? Not only the track record I remember, Stephen, watching one of your shows some years ago about the promises of District Detroit. I remember the promise of letting kids in the neighborhood play in the Little Caesars Arena. And those buildings are sitting blighted or by parking lots, you know. And so the track record of not only that, but how much blight has been created downtown. How many businesses have we heard about having to either close up or stop as being open as much as possible because they're near blighted buildings that were owned by this District Detroit One developer that did nothing with it? You know, I mean, it's so ironic. We've got a church on 7 in Woodward, which is being targeted. But how many of these businesses, these buildings, have sat, you know, without being any sort of development whatsoever? And that's been allowed to happen for all these decades. And so now they want to come back for $800 million. I think what ought to happen is they ought to be forced to comply with the initial agreements that they've signed, the initial agreements that they agreed to, and then come back for more money if that's what we're going to talk about. And I think the amount of money just seems astronomically large.
Yeah, Richard.
So I'll be a fat no.
Richard, I'm in the same camp as you are about the numbers here. I think, you know, $800 million is a lot of money. And again, it's more to subsidize this project than we spend on other projects. And I heard very clearly what Andrew Cantor was saying, and I appreciate his effort to kind of illuminate all of that. But I really am not seeing how we have to continually do this. And it never gets any better. Malachi, I want to bring you back into the conversation here. First, to respond to what we heard from Andrew Cantor, but then to talk also about what Mike from Chesterfield is saying, which is that this completes an important piece of downtown redevelopment.
Yeah, I think that's that's part of, I mean, this doesn't happen, you know, in a silo. This is all part of the broader context of what's going on downtown. These kinds of developments leverage off of each other. You know, I kind of like it to a snowball rolling downhill. You want to keep that momentum going. The hotels are not just for Little Caesars Arena. You know, they're going to be for the NFL draft when it comes to town. I think a lot of the enhancements you've seen to the Riverwalk and to Quinder Cut and some of the things he mentioned are also, you know, about attracting these big events to come downtown. And with that, you need amenities, you need hotels, you need restaurants, you need, you know, walkable public spaces, you need all of that stuff. This is all kind of one big project to turn, you know, to reshape downtown Detroit into a modern urban space that people want to come to, not just in the city from the neighborhoods, but regionally. You know, to Andrew's point, you know, this will create a much larger economic impact in Southeast Michigan in general. You know, all of the subsidies are not coming directly from taxpayers in the city. You know, there's also this transformational brownfield, which is the bulk of the subsidy is state money. So, yeah, I mean, what I think is interesting, though, is when we're talking about numbers this large, it's kind of hard not for your eyes to get crossed because it's so conceptual. And you know, we're talking about, you know, putting up money to get, you know, access to more money that gets unlocked through these deals. And I think for the average resident who doesn't have access to any kind of tax abatement to rebuild the garage or, you know, add an extension on their house or, you know, even get, you know, the kinds of property tax breaks that developers get access to, I think that's where some of the frustration comes in, right? I mean, it's hard to have a property in this city. It's hard to be a homeowner in this city. And if you want to make investments in your neighborhood, you just don't really get access to the same kinds of financing help.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a continual source of frustration in a city where we've had so many people evicted from their houses over, you know, owing, in some cases, you know, just a few hundred dollars in property taxes. And it's a huge frustration when thousands of Detroit homeowners can't afford to fix their roofs or their porches or make really basic repairs.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with Malachi Barrett of Bridge Detroit about the District Detroit. We had planned to be joined by my friend Ray Basham, who is a Wayne County Commissioner, to talk about severe work shortages at the county. We're going to do that next week because we still have some steam in this conversation about the District Detroit. We'll get to more of your phone calls and social media comments next. Cynthia and Lonnie in Detroit, Frank and Lavonia, you will be up next. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phone. That's 313-577-1019. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Bringing you news that matters.
Stories that impact your life.
Music from the Motor City and around the world.
This is 101.9 WDET.
Detroit's NPR station.
This is Detroit Today. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and our guest is Malachi Barrett. He's a reporter for Bridge Detroit, covers the city of Detroit. He has been writing quite a bit about these proposed plans to expand the District Detroit with a lot of residential and commercial and retail options that we don't have in abundance in other parts of downtown Detroit. We want to hear from you what you think about these plans and about the proposed public subsidies for these plans. Should taxpayers in the city of Detroit or in the state of Michigan both being asked to provide about $800 million worth of tax credits for this $1.5 billion development? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you that way. Let's start with Alex in Detroit. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, I didn't know about the $800 million subsidy going to the related group until just now listening today. I find that astounding. First of all, I found it astounding that the representative they had call in said nothing about really serving the people of Detroit with this development. It was about serving capital, about serving investors seeking a greater return, right? And so there are ways we can do, we can make an impact by subsidizing developers, I think, in a better way than subsidizing billionaires. Just a quick example. I live over in East English Village. There is a young couple guys doing a $6 million redevelopment of some retail space and some apartments in between Cadieux and Outer on Warren.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful plan. And they have paused their groundbreaking because of interest rate hikes last year. These are young guys. They've got some wind at their back from previous developments, but they are not billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to change the neighborhood. I would like to see us subsidizing and giving some help to young developers like that and not billionaires who can cushion the fall if their risk turns out to be not fruitful, which I doubt.
Alex, I'm really glad you called and gave that example because the city is full of folks who are trying to develop in places, you know, that are not downtown Detroit. And because they're not in downtown Detroit and because they're not big developments, they don't get that kind of help. And the idea that you know, the change in interest rates, the fear of recession would cause a developer, a small developer, to have to think about, you know, pausing their development, and which, of course, puts it at risk of being canceled. That's something that happens all the time, and it is this balance I think we need to take better account of is, where are you going to put the money? Where should we be investing in developers? Alex, I really appreciate the call and the example. Let's go next to Lonnie in Detroit. Lonnie, welcome to the show. Are you there, Lonnie?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead. Are you there, Lonnie? Okay, Lonnie, call us back. Let's go to Cynthia in Detroit. Cynthia, welcome
Hello.
To the show. Hey, Cynthia.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I'm a big fat no, like the other caller and the gentleman that just called. I mean, Detroit is building up, putting millions in the downtown when our kids are struggling in school. There's no tie to all this money and how... Can't we tie it to them helping improve the schools? I mean, we're building up Detroit, and our city is falling apart around Detroit.
Mm.
And it's, you know, we're just giving them all this money. And I worked for the Illiches for 18 years at a casino, and I don't even find them to be great employers. So, you know, and our schools are so bad, our kids can't even get through Wayne State, mm. let alone benefit from jobs or anything like that, because, you know, our schools are so inadequate. And I never hear us talking about our children and our schools and their future. It's all about capitalism and profit.
Cynthia,
but not for us.
I really appreciate you calling and making that point. And I want to build on that before I go back to our guest, Malachi Barrett. One of the things we are terrible at in the city of Detroit is that direct translation between the things that are happening in downtown Detroit and the lifting of communities that people rely on in the city of Detroit. And schools are a great example. Why shouldn't we be talking about the direct benefit we could require, in fact, to schools in the city from this kind of investment? It's something that we don't do and we don't talk about, and that's why we are where we are. Malachi Barrett, we've got about a minute left. Give me a sense of how people can get involved in this and what the timeline is for the decisions here.
So every Tuesday, there are public meetings at Cass Technical High School. They start at 6 o'clock. They run 2 hours. Usually the organizers are gracious enough to feed you. So if you want to come down after work, don't worry about grabbing dinner. They're going to happen every Tuesday until February 21st. These are opportunities to give public comment directly to developers. It's an opportunity to give comment to the Neighborhood Advisory Council that's going to be negotiating these community benefits. If you want more support for schools, come down and tell them that. There's been some conversation about connecting kids at Cass Tech or some of the surrounding, you know, just DPS schools in general to a University of Michigan Innovation campus that's not part of the development, but is also it's going to be happening around the same time in a similar area, is kind of seen as being connected. So these kinds of conversations are going on right now. You know, the CBO process is hopefully a way to get involved in this. And I think it's interesting to think about this in, you know, in terms of racial equity. It's something that has come up, you know, over and over again.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. And everyone is welcome at those meetings. That's right. Correct? Yep.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. Malachi Barrett, Bridge Detroit, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you for having me. Great conversation.
It's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to talk with one of my favorite people, Kidada Williams, a professor here at Wayne State, about her new book. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.